Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, October 1st, 2015. It's just about 2:30 UTC as we're starting to record this. I'm Sam Minter, and once again, Yvonne Bo is with us. Hello, Yvonne.
Hi. I'm here from beautiful Cleveland.
Cleveland this time. That's exciting.
Yes, Cleveland.
That's exciting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You like Cleveland, I take it.
I'm staying at, I use this website called TripAdvisor to look at hotels and find, what good hotels to stay in different towns.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to, find affordable hotels, all right? I got a budget for the company. I'm just trying to make sure that I stay within that budget and try to find the best value for that.
Now, so what you're telling me is Motel 6 everywhere.
No. Usually I'll find like a nice, Hilton Garden Inn or some other like off brand or something, whatever. That's like, that people like really like, and it's very clean, new, whatever. It's just, I just try to find something like quirky, anything under $200. Okay. All right. A night, something like that. Okay. So this time I came to a meeting, and, the hotel was not picked by me. So I'm staying at this hotel, which is not a dump. Okay. It's a nice, it's a decent hotel. But the thing is that what was funny was that I looked up in TripAdvisor to see what the rating was at this hotel. And this hotel is rated 11th out of all the hotels in Cleveland. I got to tell you something. Honestly, this hotel wouldn't be ranked in Miami or any other place, this wouldn't make the top 100. I was like just thinking, I'm like, geez, really? This is Cleveland? This is 11th? I'm like, I don't know. It's just kind of like, there's not that many options. This place is like ugly, dumpy. It's Cleveland. I'm sorry for any of you Cleveland fans out there, but I gotta be honest with you, Cleveland just sucks. And I would like to get out of here as soon as possible.
Well, let me ask, is it better or worse than that place you went? Where was it? North Dakota?
Scott's Bluff, Nebraska.
Nebraska. Better or worse than Nebraska?
I got to be honest with you. I found more character in Scott's Bluff than in Cleveland.
Okay.
Yeah. I got to be honest. Scott's Bluff may be tiny and whatnot, but it made up for it with substantial amounts of like character. Like, we went to eat to this place that was local, that just was, you could tell it was a very local place, and it was not expensive, but it was just quite good. And you could see that the people were very creative in putting the place together. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
You looked at the menu, you're like, God, wow.
So it had that small town charm.
Yeah, it had a lot of charm. I mean, we went, I couldn't find a Starbucks, but I found this little cafe in town that made like brilliant coffee. I mean, I got the coffee and it was delicious. And I was like, look at my God. I'm like, really? I'm in, this middle of nowhere. It's not a branded place, but I tell you what, the coffee, if I lived in the town, I would never go to a freaking Starbucks if I had that coffee place there.
Mm-hmm.
Put it to you that way. So, yeah, so, it had a lot of charm. I did not see any of that here.
So you're telling me Cleveland has no charm?
Cleveland pretty much sucks.
Okay, so anyway, our agenda for today.
After I insulted all the Clevelanders out there.
Yes, all our listeners from Cleveland, which I'm sure we have some, right?
I'm sure somebody.
Maybe. Anyway, if you're from Cleveland, write in on our Facebook page, on the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page, and tell us all the wonderful things about Cleveland that Yvonne
that
is missing out on.
Right. Yeah.
There you go. So anyway, we're going to talk about, of course, election 2016. We're also going to talk about the Speaker of the House, because, of course, we had a resignation, and now we have the whole little thing where we're going to replace him and everybody moves up the chain or whatever's going to happen.
Something's going to happen.
And, of course, there are all kinds of associated things about, was there going to be a government shutdown and kicking that down the road, et cetera, et cetera. And then we're going to talk about Syria. We talked about Syria last week, but there have been more developments since, so we're going to talk about Syria again, and then we'll wrap it up with a lightning round. So that's our plan.
And by the way, before I forget, last week, you and Bruce were talking about cars.
Ah, yes.
It's very funny that you guys, You guys barely know anything about cars. It's very obvious. Yeah, they got wheels and they go around and there's a little steering wheel. And I was like,
you know, as we were talking about that, I was like, I know Yvonne's going to have some opinions on that.
Well, look, I've been somebody in my family. We've owned VWs for multiple generations. To be honest with you, it was both my brother and my father actually own one of the affected cars by this whole basically fraud. There's no other word for it. I felt very insulted by the whole thing, but I don't know. I'm just like right now, it was just, you know, we own a Volkswagen at home as well, like right now. And I just, you know, I have an Audi. I just thought the whole thing, I will say that I'm giving a little bit of a pause to see what the response of what they're going to do right now, because it seems like I can see that there's a lot of people at the company who apparently didn't know what was going on that feel the same way I do, that are just as insulted. There was a lot of like, people, workers, people that just took this very, very personally, the fact that this happened. Mm-hmm. So, a couple of bozos thought that this was a brilliant idea of how to sell more cars and took it upon themselves to do this. It's just ridiculous.
We were talking about last week, it has to be more than like a couple of people. I mean, there has to
no,
be.
There had to be certain management involved in having this happen. There's no doubt about it. What happened with it was, I was reading additionally last week that they did order the software from Bosch. Bosch is a major manufacturer of car parts in Germany. Most German cars have Bosch parts. And, Bosch prepared it and they wrote a letter to Volkswagen and said, guys, you're doing this for testing, right? Because you do understand if you use this, it's illegal, right? When they sent it to them.
Uh-huh.
You know? I mean, they flat out told them this. Okay? All right? And sent them a letter. Because when they prepared it, they were concerned. Precisely because of that. It's very obvious that whoever made the final decision to include this in the car had to be somebody that was in management that decided this was the way to make the car work the way they wanted it to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they decided that this was a trade-off that they were willing to live with, because there was a trade-off. You know, I'm sure the guy is like trading less fuel economy, you know, better fuel economy, more performance, which reduced CO2 to a certain extent to increase nitrous, you know, but with an increase in nitrous oxide. In Europe, the limit for nitrous oxide is higher permissible than in the U.S.
But they were still exceeding the European limits too, just by not as much, right?
Actually, for the most part, no.
Okay.
As far as I know, no. That engine was sold, and the whole problem started like in the early 2000s, where the U.S. passed these more stringent limits on NOx. Europe had not followed suit. Many German manufacturers made diesels. They wanted to sell them in the U.S., and it took a whole bunch of them to try to figure out how to do it. Most others figured out that the only way to do it was at a urea tank, okay, which uses automotive urea. You've heard, right? It's urea. They spray it on the exhaust, creates a chemical reaction, reduces the NOx down to the level acceptable, okay? And it's expensive to put that in, and also they need to be refilled every 10, 15,000 miles. As a matter of fact, the car will throw at you a warning if the tank is low. And basically, if you refuse to refill it, you will not be able to drive the car. Okay? You basically have to get towed, get the damn tank refilled before you can continue running the car. So nobody else could figure out how to do it without it. When Volkswagen came out and said, Eureka, we could do it without urea, everybody was like, shit, really? How? And that's the funny thing, that every other competitor was like, scratching their heads, because nobody else could replicate what Volkswagen was doing with a car. So there were a number of people who were suspicious. I'm like, how the hell did they do it? I mean, we haven't been able to do it. Okay? So, the thing is that it does work The problem is that the drawbacks that the system had is reduced fuel economy, reduced performance, and apparently it also impairs the life of the engine as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to have the system that they devised. So there were massive trade-offs. But, you know, you didn't have to install an expensive urea tank. So, I mean, somebody thought that, I mean, you've got this issue where you've got the different regulations between Europe and the U.S. The reason why the fraud was really found out was because there was a group of environmentalists that were insisting, why the hell can't we have the same NOx standards in Europe to reduce smog? Because there is a bigger smog problem in Europe because of this, because they use diesels a lot more. And the NOx is a carcinogen plus increased ground smog. So why can't we have the standard as in the U.S. and Europe? You know, what's the big deal? And so they decided to test the cars on the road, and then they found out that they tested a BMW, and the BMW came out flying colors, no problem. And then they tested a VW, and the numbers kept coming back 40 times higher. They were like, fuck, wait a minute, is this right? They tried it again. They tried it again. And then, so the reality is the Europeans want it. I think a lot of them wanted this number. It's just, you know, they're trying to convince the government, hey, we could just do this, and then find out that, well, apparently not. So, I don't know. Look, they said today, this week, a couple of updates that apparently they are going to come up with a fix.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly that fix entails, they haven't, I'm going to assume that for most people, what they're going to tell them is that we will, you know, enable the software, you know, reprogram the car, reflash the software, and just, you know, make it work the way it was, you know. It worked, but you know they're probably going to have to offer people money to compensate for the fact that they're going to have a car that is not going to perform as they purchase and going to have a reduced life,
not as good mileage, not as good life.
Exactly,
all of this stuff.
Yeah, and actually, I know that one of the board members of Volkswagen actually already pounded the table and said that, you know what, screw this, you just buy back all the cars and just buy them all back, fuck it. You know, it'll be billions of dollars, but they're like, you know, this is just too great a harm that we've done that we should just buy all the cars back. The hell with it. So some people are inside the company pushing to do that.
So now the one thing we didn't really get into last week at all was, other than a very high level, not knowing a damn thing, as you mentioned, was, the financial impact on here, how strong is VW in terms of being able to weather this?
Now, VW is very strong. I mean, they generated close to about 15 to 20 billion in profit, you know? I mean, they calculated right now the impact of, you know, buying back the cars is like $8 billion. They could afford to buy back the cars. I mean, it's going to hurt, plus the penalties and the other things. It's going to be financially substantially impactful. Is it going to bankrupt the company? I don't think it's going to bankrupt the company. But it certainly is going to be a substantial impact. It's going to probably delay investments, and they can't do other things because they're going to have to divert money to do this. It'll hurt their competitive position for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, the other thing is, regardless of what actions they take here, it's got to be a ding on their on their brand as well. People are going to think twice about buying one.
I was thinking about that. I do think that there is some impact to that. We'll see what the response is and what happens. Look, Hyundai got caught a couple of years ago faking fuel economy results, and they had to pay like $400 or $500 million. Toyota got caught like hiding like problems with
the prototypical thing. Example of this is of course Tylenol, when they had the Tylenol poisonings.
Sure.
And Tylenol just pulled everything everywhere right away.
Right.
And just, you know, came right up front and said, whatever, we don't know what's happening here, but it's our responsibility. We're yanking everything. And you know, people did not lose their trust in Tylenol because Tylenol took such strong actions.
Well, the CEO of Volkswagen has come flat out, and he's not. They're not mincing words about the fact that they committed a fraud. So that's been one thing that's consistent. The CEO for Volkswagen North America posted a video on their website stating flat out, "Yes, we cheated all of you, and we're going to have to do something to make it right." and we're figuring out what that is. So they're not shying away from the fact that it's like, you know, it's not like it's a technical thing or whatever. You know, the statement was like referring to the fact that they broke everybody's trust. We did it. There's nobody else to blame. And, you know, we're working very hard and trying to figure out how to make it right. And, you know, we're going to be forthcoming with something soon. So that's depends on the speed that they come back and how strong a response it is. I think that that's really what's going to gauge, you know, what's going to be, what the impact is going to be long term. So,
okay then. So, you know, since you listened to last week's show,
by the way, guys, something you guys don't listen. Everybody modifies software in cars, by the way. As a matter of fact, there's a whole bunch of aftermarket vendors that do this kind of stuff for Volkswagens, for BMWs, for anything. You can alter all sorts of performance parameters.
Well, we'd talked a long time ago on this show. Like my wife had a Volkswagen for a while.
That's right.
That had all kinds of problems, and part of that seemed to have been because somebody had modified the computer
That's correct. Like, and I do recall that. I was going to mention those. Like, I'm surprised you didn't remember that. I was like, there are for Volkswagen. The people that make them, as you mentioned, they will improve like performance, fuel economy, a whole bunch of other things. They can screw around with a whole bunch of components, but they can have impact on other things negatively. There are some other, you can screw around with the software and get the damn car to do anything you want. Hell, like right now, cars are so sophisticated. You know, we talked about this, about the security breaches and whatever. What can you control? I mean, you can control steering, you can control fuel, you control acceleration, you control braking, for God's sakes. Like, if you really, you know, from the computer system in the car, a modern car is basically just a rolling computer system connected to all sorts of, mechanical pieces. It's all it is. So,
and of course, whenever we talk about the coming self-driving cars, that's going to be what it is now times 100.
That's absolutely. Yep.
Okay. Anything besides Volkswagen that we talked about last week that you'd like a quick comment on before we move to the rest of the show?
No. Let's, because I think I think that was the one that I knew that we hadn't talked about that I would have loved to talk about.
Knew you would not let it go without talking about Volkswagen. So
yeah.
Anyway, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll kick it off with this week's election 2016 update. We'll be back right after this.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break, this is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Okay, we are back. So, the elections.
Elections!
So, I think we should start out with the fact that, I mentioned last week when we were talking.
I hate getting questions about Fiorina. Could I be honest? I keep everybody, oh, you worked at HP. And then now this is the thing. Oh, you worked at HP. Oh, so what did you think of Carly? Oh, my God.
Question. I think we should start by mentioning that last week we talked a little bit about the polls, said that, Trump and Carson were down a little bit, but not a huge amount. And Fiorina and Rubio were up. Now I think we can say more than that now. Trump is still ahead by a significant amount, but he is well off his highs now.
He is well off his highs. He's coming down.
He peaked in the Real Clear Politics average a little bit over 30%, and he's now at about 23%.
Yep.
So he's down a considerable bit. Carson is also down from his peak. As we said, Fiorina, and by the way, when we finished off the debate, I said I would not be surprised if in a couple weeks, when we looked at it, it was Trump, Carson, Fiorina in the top three. And right now, it's Trump, Carson, Fiorina in the top three. followed by Rubio in fourth. And then Bush. One thing that's been interesting. One thing I did mention. Bush. I predicted this debate didn't help him at all. Blah blah blah. He's actually up since the debate as well.
I thought he did better than the first debate. Okay. Mm-hmm. I thought he did much better than the first debate.
I mean, he's still in fifth place, but he's better than he was.
But he's better. I mean, he picked up a few points. I mean, he did better at that debate than in the previous one. So I thought that he did pick up some support. But the guy who like now is like ahead of him is like Rubio.
Well, effectively, Rubio's at 9.5, Bush is at 9 in the Real Clear right. Politics average. They're essentially tied.
Yeah,
maybe Rubio has a slight advantage there, but it is slight.
But we keep having people drop out. So we've had quite a few people. I don't know. There was somebody talking about the records of like the shortest campaigns in like election history, and had a couple
whether,
that have
whether,
come to very
whether
close.
Walker was that? Yeah. So we really only had Walker drop out here. There was a rumor about Jindal dropping out, but then he denied it. He said,
"What about Perry?"
Well, yeah, Perry had dropped out several weeks ago. So that's
So we've had Perry drop out and now Walker drop out.
But here's the thing. All the people who are dropping out are the people who are of course, like, at 0% anyway. So their votes have already been redistributed. Like, it would be much more interesting if we had, like,
I wonder who the hell votes for Jindal. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out who the hell's the Jindal supporter. I mean, I'm like, you're...
Well, I mean, you can't even figure out Carson. So,
No. But here's the thing, right? Carson now has become like kind of like famous, right? Okay. So if you're going on a poll, you've got a whole bunch of people who have no idea about nothing. Oh, yeah, that guy Carson, right? But who goes and says Jindal? I mean, based on what? I mean,
apparently only one out of every 200 people says Jindal. So
So I don't know. Is Louisiana, percentage of U.S. population, like one out of that? Okay. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, all right. So I guess a whole bunch of people in Louisiana who know who the hell he is.
Well, I don't know. I don't know for sure whether the people in Louisiana even like him, but...
I said that no... Well, at least they know who he is.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Well, yeah.
If you take the average person out on the street and you ask them, who is Bobby Jindal? What do you think is the percentage you're going to get that they're going to accurately tell you he's the governor of Louisiana?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I would say like less than 20%.
So, we do see the free arena bump, although it seems to have bumped and then leveled off. I don't know. It's too, we'll keep watching it here. The question.
Well, of course, then she keeps like going and like Fiorina keeps going and banging away about the fact that she's seen this video that doesn't exist. That even the today I was like flipping through the channels and they had this thing on Fox. Where they're actually going, getting all over her, the fact that, what is she freaking delusional? The damn video she's saying doesn't freaking exist, right.
And by the way, this one isn't an interpretation of, what they meant by the stuff on these Planned Parenthood videos. Apparently, she's actually referring to seeing something that actually does not appear anywhere in the videos itself. There is a mention of something, but she implied there was actual video of that thing. And anyway, whatever. No one cares. No one who's a Fiorina voter cares. Okay?
I guess. If you're a Fiorina voter, I guess. Well, look, you're just charmed by her speaking ability, I guess. Anyway.
So we do have, the question is, we had this big fall for Trump, big fall for Carson, do they continue to fall? Do they level off? I don't think we know yet, but I think in terms of Trump specifically, it has been clear in the last week that, I mean, he's even acting like his bubble's been burst.
Yes. He has
been acting very fragile and like he doesn't know what to do now that his polls aren't like, you know,
soaring
and continuing to go up. He's like, oh my God, you know, people are starting to turn away. What the hell do I do?
And
Rubio specifically has started to hit him on those kinds of things. Like, he's an insecure blowhard. He doesn't, you know, but whatever, in ways that are actually getting under his skin. As opposed to, like, you know, the people all the time who are like, you know, oh, well, that's not true. He's not telling the truth. Well, he's just going to bluster his way through that. But you tell, you say on TV that Fiorina emasculated him, and all of us, or actually, I think the quote was cut his balls off.
Yeah, basically.
You know, all of a sudden, he's like, no, she didn't. No, she didn't. What do you mean? No, she didn't.
Right. I know.
which, of course, makes him sound like a whiner. A little whiner.
And then he was like bitching to Forbes and like calling, you know, calling some insults out to Steve Forbes, calling them losers because they estimate his net worth in less than half of what he says he's worth. Mm. And he was railing against them. I'm richer! Something, I don't know.
Yeah, so anyway, like, I think some of his magic has started to wear off. And so I mean, you look at the field, and I mean, like, the all of the pros looking at this still sort of say, okay, you know, I don't care what the polls say. Trump's not going to be the nominee. Carson's not going to be the nominee.
No, it's not. I mean, he's already fading right now.
So they still talk about, is it going to be Rubio or is it going to be Bush? You know?
I will say, you know, I'm wondering at what point do Rubio and Bush get together and, like, make some sort of an alliance of some kind?
Well, because they were all buddy friends before they both decided to run.
Yep.
You know, so I
think Bush, let's face it, Bush thought he was going to walk away with it, right?
Yeah.
It's not happening right now. So I think he's got to cut some kind of deal here somewhere. I think so. Now he still has the money.
But some of the donors are going, well, he seems like he's stuck in the mud. Rubio seems hotter right now. Maybe I should give to Rubio instead.
Right.
Whatever you're flipping around, stop.
Oh, sorry.
You keep flipping the thing around. Like,
yeah. I'm sorry.
See, before, like, he was doing this for a while, and I texted him instead of saying it live on the podcast, and they stopped for a little while, and then all of a sudden he's going again, flipping whatever the hell it is.
Well, I can't see the text messages. I'm actually using the phone to talk on Skype.
Ah, okay. Anyway, so you're flipping the thing, and anyway.
I have the cards to my hotel room key. I don't know. I just sitting around. I was just,
Yeah. So before we stop talking about the polls, the other thing that I'll mention is that the next Republican debate, which is at the end of October, which is after the Democratic debate, by the way, but the next Republican debate is at the end of October, is on CNBC. And CNBC just announced their inclusion criteria, which is a little bit different than the other two, which were like, we're going to take the top 10 or whatever, or CNN was anybody over 1%. CNBC is going to be anybody over 3%.
Anybody over 3. Hmm.
Although they did announce that if you're at 2.5, they'll round up.
Okay.
So it's really anybody over 2.5.
Okay. So that means basically, like, in the national numbers, that would mean like, now it would be Christie, Huckabee, Kasich, Cruz, Bush, Rubio, Fiorina, Carson, and Trump.
Right, which means Paul out.
No Ron Paul.
No Rand Paul. No Jindal.
No Rand Paul. Yeah. Yeah,
none of those guys. All those guys are out. Now, they will have a junior table debate again, but come on, guys. It's time to stop.
Who cares?
It's time to stop with those.
Right. If you're in a junior table debate, you need to quit your campaign, like, right now.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so Fiorina graduated from that. She did good enough in the junior table debate. She made it into the second debate.
That's it. But all the other guys have not shown they're idiots.
You know,
I
don't care how well Lindsey Graham does in the junior table debate the third time around.
Right. Or Santorum, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, like, they do something really outstanding Okay, they're still, they've been stuck at like 1% or less for months. Come on. It's time to give it up. I mean, even Rand Paul apparently has been signaling, not that he's out, but that he's going to be concentrating a little bit more on his Senate campaign right now.
I would think that that's prudent.
You know, and so, yeah. Anyway, so it'll be interesting to thin the field. I'm hoping that, I mean, that's still 9 people. You know, okay, so we went from 10 people, 10 people in the first debate to 11 people in the second debate to 9 people in the third debate. I want some more thinning than that. I want to get it down to like 6 or 7.
6 or 7? That sounds like a good number.
You know,
six is good.
So I could see, like, you know, the list you gave, Christy Huckabee Kasich, you know, come on.
They should be out.
They should be out. I mean, if the threshold was set at 5%, it would be Cruz, Bush, Rubio, Fiorina, Carson, Trump. And that seems like a reasonable...
That seems like a reasonable, you know, set of candidates.
And I understand that Kasich, Huckabee, and Christie are still sort of like, we can do it! We can do it! But come on.
Yeah, Huckabee, come on.
No, you can't.
Huckabee, no, you can't. You know, nobody likes you, Huckabee. I mean, you know, only, like, what's her name? That idiot in Kentucky or wherever the hell it was. You know, she likes you. Other than that,
yeah. And I mean, people say positive things about Kasich, and but you know, it's not catching on. I'm sorry, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he came in late, you know, and he didn't really have that much money. I mean, I don't know. It's, but anyway, so going, you know, so I wanted to shift a little bit towards the Democrats.
Yes, absolutely.
So Hillary gave some interviews this week, and in one interview that they were asking her about this whole email thing. I can't remember which channel she was being interviewed. I don't know if you saw a little bit of this interview.
Probably not. I probably read stuff about it, but I did not see the interview.
Oh my God, she was, you know, she was so, I mean, I put out this tweet about it where they said she just comes across just so not genuine. I mean, it was just off the wall bad. Okay, the interview. I mean, they were asking her the questions. She's really exasperated by the whole thing, and she was just off the wall bad. There's just no other way of putting it. Like, I mean, I just like don't know what the hell.
She just can't hide the fact that she's disdainful of the question itself. That
yes,
kind of thing.
Yes.
Like, absolutely. Why are you bothering me with this thing? I'm supposed to be president. Leave me alone. That kind of attitude.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and that's exactly the kind of thing that she can't afford. And that's exactly
that's
the reason
she's getting. That's why she's burying herself with this damn thing.
She dropped from nearly, you know, back in
invincible.
Yeah, I mean, she was at like almost 70% in the polls a year ago. You know, 60-something percent in the polls. Hell, she was over 60% as recently as June. And since June, she's just going to be going down, 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 down. And the reason is this kind of stuff. It's that she cannot shed this feeling of being entitled. Like, how dare you question me on this? It's stupid, and you're stupid for asking, and I'm supposed to be president, so stop bothering me about these things so I can go ahead and be president.
Yeah.
No one likes that.
Right.
You know, completely leave aside the underlying issues that she's being asked about. The way in which she responds with that attitude is just off-putting. To everybody. I mean, I shouldn't say everybody. I'm sure there's some people that like it, but
it's not helping her campaign to come across like that when the questions are being asked of her. I mean, she's just annoyed. She's irritated. She's flat out just disdainful of the fact that the questions are being asked of her. It's just ridiculous.
I mean, she's going to have to appear before this Benghazi committee in a little while. I forget exactly when that happens, but it's sometime in the next month or two.
Well, that's going to be a circus.
And you know, we had the what's his name? McCarthy? No. The guy who's up for Speaker of the House. Anyway, he's he let slip in an interview the other day that he is like, well, the Benghazi hearings have been going really well. I mean, look at her polls, you know?
Oh, gosh.
And so, of course, she's slamming back that he essentially admitted that the purpose of these hearings is nothing to do with Benghazi. It's about dragging Hillary through the mud.
Well, I think that's true.
I think that's sort of been obvious all along, but the fact that the guy, you know, one of the guys involved in it is admitting it. Whether he admit, and of course he said, that's not what I meant, but come on.
Oh, what? No, yeah, come on, give me a break.
Anyway, but no, that's going to be, if she can't control this kind of stuff, then having her in front of hostile Republican senators for, you know, an 8-hour session or whatever is just going to generate so many video clips of her
annoyed, irritated,
yeah,
red in the face, pissed off.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, she has to figure out a way to, like, not do that.
Take like, smoke like a whole bunch of weed before the hearing and just, you know.
Oh, yeah, that'll like, go over well.
Yeah, groove, yeah, you know. Yeah, the guy.
I understand her position is that these guys are in a witch hunt for her and that they're blowing up issues that don't really matter into thing, you know. And of course, the whole email server is tied into that because of, you know, the reason it's, they were subpoenaing it for emails relevant to Benghazi and blah, 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 blah. You know, I recognize that she feels that this is a completely unjust effort to go after her. And I actually think she's right, probably, on most of it. But it doesn't matter. She has to figure out a way to react to it in a way that makes it seem like, you know, they really are the bullies, as opposed to, you know, her just being annoying.
An asshole.
Her being an asshole. Yeah, yeah. That's a good way to put it. And I don't know if she has it in her.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think she could do it. I just don't think she could do it. You know, the other day, yesterday, they had the Aaron Burnett on CNN was interviewing Bill Clinton about the you know, for something related to Clinton Global Initiative.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could listen. Hillary is not Bill. Okay.
No.
The ease which Bill can engage people and communicate and make you feel like, you know, the empathy that he can transmit as he speaks. Okay.
And he can take you right off. Like, you can be coming into a conversation with Bill Clinton completely hostile to everything Bill Clinton stands for. And 5 minutes into the conversation, you're going like, oh, maybe he has got a point.
Exactly. And that's Bill. Hillary is like, fuck you. Why are you questioning me? Who the fuck do you think you are? And it's just like, seems like it's like breathing out of her pores. Okay. And I mean, she's like just irritated and annoyed by it. And I just don't know. I mean, can you win the presidency being like that? I don't know, but I find it very hard that she could. I mean, maybe she can. I mean, you know, but she's got to do something to be able to connect better with the voters. This is what I think.
Well,
she's just not doing it right now.
And as I've been posting, you know, there was another update less than 24 hours before we're recording this on electiongraphs.com, where I post my election analysis for the general election at the moment. And yet another state, if you look at her versus Rubio, yet another state flipped in Rubio's direction. Rubio made yet another state close, specifically Michigan. It's close in Michigan, which has voted Democratic since George H.W. Bush in 1988. And Rubio's made it close in that state. She is in trouble in the general election right now. And I know most people aren't paying a lot of attention to the general election at the moment because everything's about the primaries and we don't even know who the Republican nominee is going to be. But she...
Well, we don't know who the Democratic nominee is going to be.
Well, that's true. That's true. But she has been deteriorating, you know, over the last few months. Just in every... You know, I keep posting, like, since like, May, I've posted one update that was positive to Hillary Clinton. One. And there was one other that was split where there were...
Well, that's your fault. You're the one that's, like, leading the campaign against her. You bastard.
Yeah, that's me. So there was one update that had some positive and some negative, but the only one that was clearly in her direction since May. Everything else has been moving against her, moving against her, moving against her. Now, having said that, it has sort of diverged. Like, Bush and Rubio are continuing to get better and better against her. The other candidates have been sort of flat the last couple months, but...
So continuing on the Democratic theme, okay...
Yes, and I got a couple things on this line too. But go ahead.
So So what do you think the odds on Mr. Biden like jumping in or not right now, given where Hillary is at?
I think the deal right now is that lots of people want Biden to run.
Yeah,
and he ain't so sure himself.
I think you're right,
and. So he's putting off the decision as long as he possibly can. I think where he really is, you know, if it's absolutely clear that Clinton is collapsing and, you know, it looks like Clinton's going to lose the general election. It looks like, you know, she's losing to Sanders in the primaries. Then Biden will jump in. But as Bruce pointed out last week when we talked about this, we've got deadlines coming up. The reasonable deadline is if he's going to get in, he should get in before the first Democratic debate, which is in a couple weeks. But beyond that, the next real thing is in November. There are a whole bunch of deadlines for filing to be on primary and caucus ballots in November. I mean, he's already missed the one to be on the ballot in South Carolina. That was yesterday, September 30th. But if Clinton is truly completely and totally falling apart, you could imagine some sort of scenario where he's going on the notion that he's going to pick up Clinton delegates after she drops out. Because once if you are bound to a candidate who drops out, generally that makes you end up a free agent. And so he might be going on some sort of theory like that, to do a really late entry into the race. But I think, you know, if he's going to get in, he really should get in the next couple of weeks before the Democratic debate. And the Democratic debate, the organizers of the, I forget, is it CNN? I forget who's doing the Democratic debate. But they put out that he can get in as late as 24 hours before that debate, and he's in the debate.
Gotcha.
But he has to declare that he's in.
I gotcha.
So I don't know. You're asking for odds. I give it 50-50 right now.
Okay, that's a good number.
You know, I don't think he keeps saying in the interviews that I don't want to do this unless I feel the fire, unless I feel like I can really commit wholly and totally to it. The bottom line is you don't say that shit if you're in the position where you can commit to it wholly and if you really want it. So the mere fact that he's talking that way indicates that he's not there. Right now he doesn't want to run. Right now, he does not feel like he's psychologically able to run, but he's holding the door open because, you know, it's been a relatively short time since his son died. Maybe in another month or two, he'll feel a little different. So he's holding that door open, but, you know, there's only so long you can do that. I mean, unless you really and truly are playing the game of, you're expecting the primary battle to go on and to be in a position where, you know, Hillary's dropping out and you can pick up her delegates or something crazy is happening where, you know, it's just total chaos and you can come in and be the savior. But, you know, frankly, you know, even with the polls, including him right now, you know, he's still running third to Sanders.
I know. But the thing is, you know,
if he jumped in, it changes the dynamic.
It changes. It changes that a lot. So, I think that, you know, I agree with you with the 50-50 assessment. I mean, I don't think that it's any better than that. And like you said, it is getting pretty late. I mean, if he's going to make a decision, he's got to make a decision really quick. I mean, you know, he just can't continue waiting. So, I mean, look, Hillary had a lot of support. And Hillary didn't do this bad in the last campaign. Maybe she could finally somebody fucking, like, grabbed her after her last bat interviews, just fucking knock some common sense into her and get her to stop acting like a fucking idiot about this whole email thing.
I dispute that a little bit. I mean, maybe not quite this bad, but she was pretty bad last time around. That's why Obama had his opening in 2008.
I don't think she was that bad. I think Obama was a lot better is the thing.
Right.
Okay. And there isn't an Obama on the other side is my point. Okay. I think it was really that Obama was a lot better. That's it. There's still plenty of time. So we'll see. So moving
other thing I'd want to mention on Clinton Sanders, they all released their fundraising numbers a few hours ago. Or they leaked them. I mean, they have to officially submit them for the end of quarter, which wasn't quite over a few hours ago. But they all sort of leaked preliminary numbers. And Clinton did get a record-breaking haul of money for Q2. But the news was that Sanders was just behind her. Like, there wasn't a huge gap there. Sanders is raking in a good deal of money, too.
Sure.
And which is... and just like the the Clinton Obama dynamic in 2008, Clinton's is mostly from big donors. Sanders is getting tons and tons and tons of small donors.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, we had a brief period where Sanders looked like he'd peaked and it went back down again. He's been heading back up again in the polls, and Biden's flattened off. Hillary just keeps going down, though. So at some point, if these trends don't stop, those lines are going to meet and Sanders is going to be ahead. Yeah, we're still a ways away from that right now. But, I mean, Hillary has to stop the bleeding.
Yeah, she has to stop the bleeding. She has to figure out a way. I just don't know what that way is going to be. I just don't know.
Hey, but this whole new initiative, this plan to be more spontaneous and likable, that's not working?
No, it hasn't been.
Because remember they leaked that thing about the big plan like 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Yes.
It doesn't seem to be going that well.
Yeah, no, not really.
And as I said at the time, if you have a plan to be spontaneous, you've already failed.
Yeah. She's just, yeah.
One more Clinton-related thing. We talked briefly about the emails. There was another batch of the emails released today. And there were a couple of things that have been said about it. One, they're just some... Just like with each of these batches, there's some silly things. Like there was one time where Hillary was trying to call the White House and the operator didn't believe she was Hillary Clinton and asked her to prove that she was Hillary Clinton by giving her private internal line at the White House. And she's like, I don't know my number. I don't call myself. So there's that. And there was a number of little silly things like that. But also there've been some headlines that said there were multiple attempts to hack her email by hackers, which is not surprising at all. But then apparently when you dig into it, what are those attempts? Those are attempts are phishing emails that apparently were not clicked on by anybody. So basically the real head, we've had all these sort of breathless, a few.
Right. And everybody
headlines.
Gets those. I mean, that's how they've infiltrated most places.
We've had a few breathless headlines about, the servers being hacked by Russians or whatever. When in fact, it looks like what it really is she got some phishing email. She got some spam. An email account got spam. That's such a surprise.
What a shocker.
But it's yet to be seen. I mean, I would be surprised if there wasn't hacking on this kind of thing, but we still have yet to see definitive evidence of it. But anyway, so that was going on. We talked about fundraising. Anything else about election 2016, or should we wrap it up and move on?
Well, not talk about election, but I want to talk about, it's a little bit of a election related if we talk about Mr. Bonnier's resignation.
Well, that was going to be the whole next segment.
Okay, so let's talk about that next segment.
Yeah, because that's not election 2016.
It's not election,
other politics.
Right.
So we'll move on. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the U.S. House of Representatives and the drama going on there. Back after this. Okay, we're back. So as you alluded to, Speaker of the House Bonnier, no more boner jokes, I guess, has resigned or has announced that he will resign at the end of October.
Yes.
Not just from the Speaker of the House, but also from the House.
Yep. He's done.
He is done. And of course, you know, he's been the punching bag, you know, for years now, as we've had this conflict growing between sort of the Tea Party, Liberty Caucus, I guess they were calling themselves, folks, the sort of hardline conservatives in the House versus the establishment, Republicans who've been around a while, basically.
He really ripped into those guys like really hard in interviews after he announced his resignation.
Well, yeah, all the stuff he's wished he could say for years. You mean?
Oh my God, he just unloaded on him. I was like, I saw one of the interviews. I was like, holy smokes! He hates Ted Cruz. It's very clear. Called him. I didn't realize that he went. Apparently, he referred to.
Who's
apparently,
a senator,
called him
not
a jack.
In the House, but yeah.
He hates Senator Cruz. Called him a jackass. Okay, number one. And basically said flat out that these people are not interested in governing.
Yeah.
At all.
Which they aren't. I mean, they've said as much. Because if governing means making deals and compromising and trying to figure out something
right.
that you can do that, you know, you can actually push through where it's not everything that you want, but maybe
right.
pushes you a little bit closer, but hey, gives the other guy something too. No,
right.
that yep. there's this whole significant portion of the House Republicans who have zero interest in that whatsoever.
Not one iota. Yep.
Because their point of view is we just want to stop everything.
And what he called them, basically, the word he used is to call them all false prophets, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Flat out said that. Now, the thing is that given, you know, Bonnier had been, 26 years, I think, 25 years or something like that in the House. I see, does this really play into, you know, whether this Republican Party can survive the way it is right now with how far apart these two groups keep getting.
Well, and we've been talking about this for years, that at some point this almost has to spin apart. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to spin apart. either it spins apart, or one of these factions takes over and is able to actually take control.
The problem is that it's just with the structure of how everything is, it's very hard for one of them to just take over. Because, look, like, those guys, that group in the House, is only about 40 or 50 Republicans. Okay? Mm-hmm. So there is no way that that group can take over the Republican Party. It's not big enough. Okay?
Yeah.
Yet. Yeah. But 40 and 50, what? It's going to triple in, like, 18 months?
No, not 18 months, but give it two or three elections and maybe it would.
In 12, 15, you think? I think actually that group has peaked. I got to be honest with you.
You may be right that they've peaked. I'm just saying it's not completely inconceivable if there was, you know, the necessary support there that, you know, no, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a couple years, but you know, 2030
I think that group,
is too
I think
far
this
out
group has peaked. Because they've shown that they, you know, because exactly what Bonnier has been saying, that it's, you know, what the agenda that they're trying to ram through, in the way that they're trying to ram it
they
through.
They can't actually get it.
They can't actually
they
get it.
They can't actually deliver on any of their promises. Because
not
guess
whatsoever.
What? To make something happen, you need to have some Democrats on board. At the very least, you need the moderate Republicans on board. You can't push the agenda, those 50 or so House members want, by themselves.
Right.
And like, let's say you did split the caucus, and you essentially had three parties in Congress now, which effectively you kind of have right now. You still need a coalition to generate, you know, the leadership. So what do you get? Right now, the coalition that exists is those 50 Republicans plus the rest of the Republicans. Are the moderate Republicans really going to join into a coalition with the Democrats? I don't think that's happening either. You know, so...
Not directly in that way. I could conceivably see some more conservative Democrats, like, merging into a coalition with those guys if they were so inclined to do so. But I don't think they are. You know, it's not like the Democratic coalition is as fractious as the Republican one, not by any stretch. So I don't see that they would have an incentive to do so.
Yeah, I mean, look, and what's happening right now is, I guess, everybody thinks, what's his name, Kevin McCarthy? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think that's. I think you're right. We may be wrong. It's just, you know, the leader of the Republican majority. Oh, gosh, what the hell's his name? I think you're right.
Go look it up.
I'll check it. Hold on.
Anyway, you know, it's not like we're going to get somebody more moderate than Bonnier. Bonnier's the most moderate.
Kevin McCarthy. Yeah.
You know, so Kevin McCarthy is probably going to be it. He's going to be under all the same pressures Bonnier was under. A lot of the hardline conservatives thinks that he's just the same kind of rhino who's eventually going to give in to the Democrats. And the question is, does he make more of a show of it before he does? Or what? Because, you know, in the end, you know, people seem to agree that almost no matter what you do there, I mean, in the end, like when you get to these government shutdown standoffs, in the end, the people shutting down the government have to give in.
Right.
I mean, it's just the dynamics of the thing is that when you're in the government shutdown mode, there are significant consequences to that. And you know, they're not so significant that we can't do it for a few days or a few weeks even. But it starts adding up and people start getting unhappy and, you know, veterans start not getting their checks and you know, you can't do that indefinitely. So, of course, they have to fold at some point. And the question is, do they get anything out of it that's worthwhile? I mean, they've occasionally gotten they have gotten a few things out of Obama through these techniques, but not all that much and certainly not everything they wanted. And this is the we're not going to compromise wing of the party.
Yeah, so it's just that's what I'm saying. I just don't see what you know. The fact that all that Bonnier's resignation does, well, it does two things. Number one, it highlights how frustrated the Republican leadership is at these guys.
Yes.
Number one, And the fact that their intolerant methods are really hindering the Republican agenda. Okay? I really think they are. There's just no way to get anything passed doing stuff the method that they're trying to drive, number one.
I mean, just to be clear on one of those points. When Obama came into office, he came in on a promise of reaching across the aisle and trying to work with the Republicans and try to come up with areas of common ground.
And he did.
And not sort of push through this, you know, super liberal agenda. He wanted to find the things that Republicans and Democrats could agree on. His health care plan is based on Republican plans from previous years. I mean, not only, you know, the one from Massachusetts, of course, RomneyCare, but also from previous proposals Republicans in Congress had made over the last decade.
That's right. It
was all a reach out, said, okay, here's all this stuff from things that you guys have proposed that I accept. Let's do it.
And they refused to go along with any of it.
And the point is, they had someone who was in the mood for compromise, who was in the mood to let the Republicans have significant portions of their agenda in exchange for a few things of his agenda.
And they just flat out said no.
Yes, Alex. Now? I'm in the middle of my podcast.
Stay up here until we say it's okay to come down.
Okay, I will. You didn't have to worry. I'm in my podcast. Anyway, close the door behind you. Anyway, yeah, so, I mean, if the Republicans had actually gone on a, hey, let's work with Obama, they probably would have gotten more of their agenda through than they actually have using this technique. But they didn't want to do that because it was all about all or nothing, and it was all about trying to set things up to take back the White House, and I think that's backfired.
Right. It's backfired in a big way.
Now, of course, Hillary Clinton could undo that in 2016 by, like, getting the nomination and then completely spiking the ball in such a way that, you know, the Republican wins. But, you know, Obama's,
But let me put it to you this way. But even from the other side, look, whoever, at the rate that this is going, because of a lot of this noise, my thinking is that whoever the Republican nominee is going to be, it doesn't look like they're going to wind up kowtowing so vehemently to their agenda anymore. That's what it's feeling like right now. I think that, for example, this whole thing about
you mentioned a couple weeks ago, the whole Trump saying things about raising taxes. Now, it turns out his tax plan, we hadn't mentioned his tax plan, but he did come out with a tax plan that actually does cut lots of taxes.
But he did, and it does, but at the same time. But the point was, nobody had any problem with it. The problem was that the hardliners on the right were like, well, you can't raise taxes in certain areas if you're cutting them on others. There could only be cuts. And I'm like, look. It's a mathematical equation that doesn't work that way. You got to raise revenue from somewhere. You got to redistribute it. But they were just adamantly refuse to do a combination of things in order to get to a number. And all of a sudden, now you got candidates talking about that and saying, "Oh my God, that they're going to raise some taxes on some people." And I don't hear all of a sudden everybody flipping out anymore.
Right.
For example.
Yeah, the tone is changing. Some of the things that were absolutes a few years ago are not anymore.
Right.
But meanwhile, other things that weren't absolutes a few years ago are starting to be. The climate change stuff and immigration and things like that are starting to get to the point where, you know, if you're not doing the hardline right-wing position, they...
Oh, I don't know about that either, because there were very different... I mean, I'm sorry, but there were a lot of Republicans up there slamming Trump's immigration stance as well.
Yes, they were slamming some of the details of Trump's, but there's a minimum baseline in terms of where the conversation is has moved from where it was a few years ago.
But here's the thing. For example, nobody was in agreement with Trump on deporting all immigrants. Almost nobody there was in agreement either with the whole eliminating birthright citizenship. I mean, all of those things, people were making fun of his wall and the effectiveness of the damn wall.
So somehow we've gotten back to the presidential race. Let's get back to Congress.
Well, no, my point is that going back to Congress, the Congress right now is paralyzed on these issues. This is what's not been. This is what's. These are the issues that they have passed no legislation on, which is why we were looking at the congressional velocity. And I haven't looked at.
I missed it. I didn't do my September update. I was trying to do an update on that every 3 months. And I don't know how we're doing in September, and I failed.
I don't know how we were doing this year again, if we were slower again than last year, but we know that this has been...
Actually, I have not done the update for the last 3 months.
I thought it seemed like this session actually had passed more legislation than they had.
It had been. It was going at a good pace, better than the previous two Congresses and on track for the one before that. So it's still pathetic, the
amount of legislation that's been getting through, and we know this. I mean, it's just been like, you know, let's talk about, for example, one bill that has been like in a quagmire in Congress, transportation bill, okay? Everybody knows that we need a transportation bill, okay? There is a lack of like funding for roads, things, we need to do modifications to the fuel tax, money needs to be distributed, and there's a ton of Republicans that are in favor of it, and Democrats and everybody, but we can't get this damn bill through because in a lot of instances because this damn group of like hardliners are not letting this thing happen, okay? And I'm like, you know, and Bonnier didn't want to go and just engage a whole bunch of Democrats and just ram it through either, okay? Because he could have, but you know, it just continued this fight. And I think, you know, is the new guy going to be just continuing that script and of not getting anything done, or is he just going to say, fuck it, I need to do something, you know, forget it? I guess that's the key question.
You know,
I don't have the answer to that.
I honestly don't expect much difference when we get the new guy in. If anything, given the dynamics we've seen, I think we're going to see somebody, you know, I don't know. I'm
with you. I don't think it's going to be much of a difference. We're going to have the same damn fight the same way, just a different player, just somebody else getting the shit beat out of him. Instead of
Bonnier, I mean, basically Bonnier's like, I could fight this again. I would probably win,
but I know he's. I don't want exhausted. To. I completely empathize with his situation. I wouldn't want to anymore.
And so the one thing that happened specifically in the wake of him leaving is that we were scheduled to have another government shutdown. You know, right about now as we're recording this, actually. But because of his leaving, they came to a deal, and they probably would have come to a deal anyway, but he used the extra leverage of the fact that he was leaving. They basically kicked the can down the road to December this time.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so we've got two things coming up. The debt limit is probably going to get hit again in November, and the continuing resolution that's funding the government will run out in December. December 11th, I believe they said. So right as we're getting in the, you know, Thanksgiving to Christmas time frame, we're going to have another little crisis here. Not to mention, of course, it'll not be very long before we start hitting Iowa, New Hampshire, and all that kind of stuff in February. Way to kick this right into, you know, another politically fraught time. One of the things that they did the last time around with this stuff was that Bonnier kind of engineered it so that they had the little shutdown that they wanted to have, but they did it just about as far away from an election as you possibly could so that there was time for people to forget about it before you got to the election.
It's a plan.
Whereas this time we're kicking it closer and closer to the election. I mean,
right.
You know, so we're going to have it this November. We're only talking a couple months out. Did they kick it? They kicked it to November 2015, right? Not 16.
Yeah, I thought it. Yeah, it was to this year.
Yeah. So they kicked it to this year. So there's not an election this November, obviously. But there's going to be tons and tons of presidential politics going on. There's going to be things happening. Guess what? What they're probably going to end up doing? They're going to kick it further down the road, but they may not kick it to 2017. If they end up putting another one of these right in the middle of the presidential race in 2016, that's just so dumb for the Republicans. Yeah, so maybe they'll avoid it. We'll see. But they haven't shown a lot of, you know,
they haven't given a shit about the about this. They just keep like freaking like banging their head against the wall. So, you know, you're right. We probably shouldn't expect any different at this point.
Yeah, I think we're going to see
unless
the same
patterns. Unless they get clobbered, you know, as it's happened to other parties, unless they get clobbered in the next election, you know, for these, for which it may well happen. I mean,
yeah,
it's
but
happened
we
in both directions.
But
before.
We got a couple rounds of this before we get there, before we
get to the
election.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, anything else to say about the House of Representatives of the United States?
Of America?
Of America.
Let me see.
On Earth.
I don't think so. No.
In the solar system.
In the solar system? Well, we got water on Mars.
Yeah.
Flowing water.
That's true. But that's not related to the House of Representatives. Let's take another break. And we'll come back and we'll do Syria. Back after this. Okay, we are back. Syria.
Okay, so.
The Russians are here.
So what's this damn deal now? The Russians are at war now. Fuck it. They moved in a whole bunch of planes and shit or whatever and decided, Assad is my buddy. You know, we're going to war.
Well, and what, you know, in the conversations between the U.S. and Russia about this, you know, apparently the sort of agreement was they're going after ISIS in Syria. And then, of course, they started bombing and they're not just hitting ISIS. They're basically hitting anybody who's against Assad, regardless. So that includes ISIS. It includes Al-Qaeda. It includes miscellaneous other groups that we're trying to support to fight against Assad. Small as those groups may be. And so they're going all out. And,
do you agree that from my perspective, that this doesn't help anything at all? I mean, we're just throwing like more bombs at this damn place. I mean, how does this help anything?
I generally speaking agree with you. Yes, this makes for a risky situation. Yeah, first of all, everything else aside, more people are going to die.
Yeah.
More. And yes, some of those people are ISIS people. Some of those people are Al Qaeda people. But bottom line, more people are going to die.
There's just way too many innocent people getting killed in this damn mess.
Yeah, there are lots of innocents in the crossfire in all of these zones of Syria. Yeah. So tons of innocents are getting, you know, people who just want to live their damn lives, you know? I think anything that's just putting more weapons into the arena, is going to result in more people dead, which I don't think is a positive result. Now, the other way to look at it is it possible that this kind of involvement will lead to an end of the conflict sooner? And if that happens, will it be an end that people are happy with? I think there is some chance that Russia doing this will result in, you know, if Russia is able to sort of decimate all of these people who are opposing Assad, some of which we also oppose, some of which we don't, maybe it does bring an end to the conflict sooner. Of course, it brings an end that we've as a government said we don't want, which is, you know, Assad's still in charge.
Yeah, but, but at the same time, I mean...
The other risk, of course,
here's the problem. Yeah, we said we don't want Assad, right?
Yeah.
But, okay, but you know this. If that government collapses, what's going to fill that vacuum? I mean, it's just all bad.
Yes, I agree. The other risk, of course, in this kind of thing is, you know, we may not be all in there with fighter jets and full-fledged ground troops and all of this kind of stuff, but we are in there. We have done airstrikes, and not just drones.
Yep.
We've done airstrikes with manned fighters in there.
Yep.
France was just doing airstrikes a couple weeks ago there. And we have had troops on the ground there, too. We've had special forces on the ground doing various operations in Syria. And so when you've basically got the Russians and the Americans and the French and maybe some others all actively involved in the same war zone. That's just an incredibly dangerous situation.
I know. It's just nuts.
Apparently, we are setting up some basic level coordination so that theoretically, you know, the Americans and the Russians won't attack each other by mistake. But come on.
You said the French, the Russians. Forget about the fact the, also that Iran, Israel has been.
Israel's there. You listen to this shit and you get visions of World War One.
It's crazy. It's just nuts.
Because World War One was one of these situations where nobody wanted a large-scale war.
Yeah.
But a whole bunch of people were tangled in these various alliances, and there are all kinds of folks involved in different ways. And then, you know, you get the one spark that goes off and boom, all of a sudden everybody's in a full-fledged war. And I'm not necessarily saying that will happen here, but you're setting up a situation where it's at least a possibility. And the fuck are you doing that?
I know. It's just nuts. It is just utterly. It is really nuts. So I don't know.
And you've got the usual folks on the right saying, you know, Putin is stepping all over Obama. Putin has no respect for Obama. Putin's doing whatever the fuck he wants. And Obama's doing nothing.
Listen, we have been, this is such bullshit. We have been, like you said, we have been active there and bombing and doing a hell of a lot more shit than Putin had been doing for a long time. One of the things that I read today, which is Putin has two concerns there. Has nothing to do with it. It has very little to do with us in politics. It has to do with number one. I think he does feel the threat from that spilling into Russia. Yeah. Number one, because he's right there on the border. The second part is that they also have territory there.
Although there is the argument that him getting involved makes it more likely that it's going to spill.
But you know what? Look, Putin. You know, look, from his point of view, he thinks that he's trying to secure his border.
Yeah.
Okay, number one. Okay. Let's put it the reverse. If that conflict were happening, say, for example, on the border of the U.S. and Mexico, like that, for God's sakes, and say, you know, the Russians were up to their eyeballs in it, you know, and we went in and bombed. I mean, really? I mean, come on. So let's be realistic. That is where it is. He's got a lot of interest near in that area. I believe I was reading today about that nearby there's a port city, which is there that is important for Russian trade, and he was concerned about that. He said, "Listen, we can't just let the situation just continue to escalate in this form because we are going to get severely damaged." So look, those terrorists aren't fond of the fucking Russians either. I mean, come on, the Russians have been attacked by terrorists quite a lot themselves. So, you know.
I look at this as one of those things that says, you know, if they want to dig themselves into this quagmire, go have fun. We'll be over here.
Yeah, I agree. Now, you know, some people are making fun of the fact that Kerry is still trying to find some kind of diplomatic solution to this.
Yeah.
Okay. And I honestly think that his approach is probably a better approach than anybody else's.
But the bottom line, though, I agree. Like, I think we should be exploring diplomatic approaches, but our whole approach is hobbled by the fact that we've painted ourselves into a corner saying that no future outcome here can involve Assad. And
oh gosh, but you know what? Listen, nope. I don't think that anybody is. Look, I don't think that anybody's going. Who's going to hold us to that at this point?
Look, I mean, I think we inevitably have to let go of that, but
right.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's not going to happen in the short term. It might happen. Yeah, I could see Obama doing something like that after the November election, before the new president is inaugurated, because if he did that right now, I mean, it gives so much ammunition for the Republicans for the
next, I don't think that, you know what? This is the kind of shit, you know, what we talk about.
They'll do it anyway.
Things really influence an election. Nobody would give a fuck.
You're right. I mean, time after time, it's shown that your foreign policy isn't that big a deal in presidential elections,
right.
Except unless in certain you had exceptional
like a hostage
situations.
Crisis. Yeah, exactly. Except like, you know, we had a hostage crisis or something like that. Other than that, I mean, forget it. It's not going to matter.
Yeah,
I mean,
bottom line is, you know, they're already attacking on those lines. It's just, you know, okay, you know, now it's going to be who gave up Syria? Okay, Obama gave up Syria. Obama gave up Iran. Whatever, you know. To me, I look at these things and say and see these are places where the fact that we've been involved has been a negative thing. So popping out of this is a good thing. And okay, so Russians gain some ground, the Iranians gain some ground. Who the fuck cares? We're getting out, which is positive for us.
Right.
So, I don't know. As long as we can avoid accidentally getting into a shooting war with the Russians,
I'm good.
you know, and I would hope even if we did and like we accidentally shut down shoot down a Russian fighter or they accidentally
shoot down, I don't think we're going to do anything stupid.
I'm hoping that Obama has the sense to and Putin has the sense to say, "Oops, we're sorry. Oops. We didn't mean to. Our apologies." Here's some money, you know. Let's forget about this.
Let's let bygones be bygones, shall we? Okay.
Of course, you know, if Ukraine is any indication, and the Russians accidentally shoot down somebody, they'll be like, "It wasn't us."
Right.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. It must have been Al Qaeda. You know.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
moving on.
Yep.
Okay, we'll be back after this. We'll do a lightning round. Back after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show. Which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And, hey, I'll keep you in mind. And maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne, if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. Okay, we are back. And, on last week's show, Bruce reminded me, he said, let's do a real lightning round. Let's bring back the timers. Let's stick to 2-minute rounds. And
okay.
I think that's a good idea. I mean, we've sort of...
All right. I'm good with that.
You know,
yep. He's right.
So I've got the timer going. I am going to start. I watched another TV show. I finished watching Breaking Bad. I took a long time to do it. You know, probably over a year I was watching that thing, just an episode every once in a while. It's something that when it was first, it was actually on TV and there was all the buzz about it. I tried starting it once or twice and I just couldn't get into the first episode, but then people kept talking about how good it was. And as it was ending, people were like, oh my God, this is incredible. This is the best television I've seen in forever. And so I forced myself to get through the first couple of episodes. And it really, the first couple episodes were kind of hard to get through and weren't really engaging me. But by the time I got to episode 3 or 4, I was like, okay, I'm in. And I watched the whole thing. I guess how many seasons was the thing? 5 seasons?
Jesus, yeah. You watched 5 seasons of Breaking Bad over how many days?
Oh, like over a year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I like watched an episode every once in a long while. I mean, I space these things out. I'm watching a whole bunch of different shows at the same time. So anyway, the bottom line is, the people were all right. Breaking Bad was a really good show. If you can get past the first few episodes and get into it, it's got a lot of stuff going on, a lot of good character stuff. It's very interesting. It's compelling. It keeps you going from one episode to the next. It was a great show. I'm glad I watched it. And now I'm watching Better Call Saul, which is the sequel series to it. And it seems to be okay so far. It's a little bit different vibe, but I'm only like 2 episodes into that.
I gotta admit, I'm so not, I just have not had time to watch any series.
I know. You know, the thing is, you don't have to do this binge watch thing where you watch the whole thing in a week.
It's not even the binge watch. I just don't have time to watch any series at any time. Well, but
here's the thing. Like you were talking. Oh, our 2 minutes is up. But you were talking. You're sitting there in a hotel. When we started this, you were watching some dumbass movie. You could have been watching a single episode of a series.
True. That would have been if I'm carrying my iPad or something like that, which my wife took away from me. Okay, great. Right? So, don't get me started on that.
iPad, a laptop, whatever. You just whip open Netflix.
No, I'm not
going to
watch TV on a company laptop. Okay, all right. I'm not going to carry a personal laptop. But yeah, if I would watch it because honestly, I don't like watching TV on the damn iPad or the thing. I want to watch it on the damn TV. Ah, too annoying. Next.
Okay, so what, your turn.
So the Pope came to the U.S.
Ah, yes, the Pope.
So, I don't know. I found it quite surprising the level of attention that it got.
Well, we talked about this a little bit last week, but he's a very popular pope amongst people you wouldn't expect. Like, I mean, among non-Catholics, they really like him. He's started the approach he's taken is a little bit more open, and so you've got a lot of people who have been sort of very the popes are stodgy conservatives and blah blah blah. And they're like, oh, maybe this one's a little bit different. Of course, right after he left, it turned out he met that the clerk from Kentucky who was what's her name, who was refusing the gay marriages,
Kim Daines.
And so, like, look, the bottom line is, he hasn't changed a lot of these doctrines. I mean, he's anti-gay marriage, he's anti-abortion, he's whatever, but he on all kinds of other issues, and even on those, he has expressed a, even where we disagree, we can still talk and you're et cetera, and just a much more open environment. But yeah, he doesn't fit neatly in the left-right American political spectrum because he's got some views
from both sides that appeal to both sides. Yeah.
So a lot of people are really into this Pope. I mean, in a way that, Benedict before him never had this kind of thing.
Oh, gosh, that guy was just a jerk.
this guy's getting this, the same kind of, excitement that John Paul II got before him, except in a very different way,
Well, I mean, he is trying to, and in a way that I completely agree, bring a certain level of humility and humbleness back to the church. Okay, all right? And so I think that's important. So, all right. Okay, you're up.
oh, man. Keep coughing. I just wanted to mention, iOS 9 came out a couple weeks ago. I upgraded my devices. I also, by the way, got the new iPhone 6S Plus, which is great. So it's hard for me to separate the new phone from the new OS at this point. But there are a lot of new features that are somewhat useful. It's another incremental upgrade, though. There's nothing like mind-blowing that changes everything. But there are all kinds of little improvements here and there that you're like, oh, I really appreciate that. Like, it's got a low battery mode that automatically, or it asks you for to confirm. But when you get to, like,
I'm a using that like
oh,
bonkers.
Yeah, the low battery mode by itself is like, oh my god, this is awesome.
You know, I know.
Because it's simply like when you're in a low battery situation, or when you know you're gonna be a long time before you get to a charger, you flip that on, it shuts down a whole bunch of stuff without shutting down any of the core functions when you need them, but it shuts down a bunch of background operations that, you know, hey, if you've got the battery power, make things nice, but if you know you want to save battery, you can live without, and that's really cool.
Well, like today, I was all day out, off-site or whatever at a place, so I flipped on that mode like all day, and like on a regular day, I probably would have run out of battery on my phone. But I made it all the way back, okay, just by having that mode on.
And again, this is the kind of thing, it's not earth-shattering, and I'm sure somebody's going to say Android's had it for years or whatever, but but it's just a nice incremental improvement, and, you know, it's pleasant, and
yes. There
you go. I think most of the update fits into that category, it's a good update. Okay, that's it for me. Your turn again.
Oh, my turn again. I ran out of topics.
Okay, I'll do some. I've got quite a few left here, but we're not going
to
do all of them.
We talked about everything on my list. Oh, well, wait, let me go to older lists. Maybe something we haven't talked about.
Okay, hurry it up.
No,
Pick something, or I'm going to pick something.
You pick something. I already looked at this.
Okay, this relates to iOS 9 as well. The ad blocking and ad trackers came up as one of the features that was added in iOS 9 is the ability to add programs that essentially add on to your web browser and eliminate content. Apple advertises them as generic content blockers, but the real purpose, although the ones that are top sellers at this point are ad blockers and tracker blockers, and basically the publishing industry and the advertising industry threw a little fit over the last few weeks about, oh my god, you know, this could be devastating to our incomes because we rely on these advertising. And meanwhile, people are saying, well, you know, you should have thought of that before you made your ads so damn obnoxious, before you added all these trackers that are keeping track of everything and I want a little bit more privacy than that. And not to mention, the biggest thing is all of this load has had incredible performance effects on the internet as general. So people have pointed out all kinds of websites that you go to and, you know, they've got like 30 or 40 tracking things on them and advertising things or whatever. And like the page that without, you know, that it takes like 30 seconds to load on a typical like cell connection or whatever. But if you strip out all this crap, the page loads in a second and a half. And it's like, well, duh. Of course I'm going to use this.
And
it's also been pointed out, by the way, that all of these trackers are really blocking third-party things on a site. You know, so if, in fact, you know, you're a website and you serve your own ads, they're not getting blocked. It's these ad networks that are getting blocked. It's these tracking networks that are getting blocked. And, of course, the reason that there are these networks is the advertisers don't trust the websites themselves. They're not going to pay CNN directly, please show my ad, because they want a third party in there verifying the truthfulness that they really did show this many ads, and that's why these third-party networks develop. But, you know, frankly, there are other ways to do that. You could audit log files. You could do all kinds of stuff. But, you know, this is the reckoning that's been coming, you know, and the ad blockers on the desktop have been becoming more and more popular. Now it's dead easy to get them on mobile. Now, one thing that's been pointed out, especially in iOS, and it's time to move on to the next topic, is that this applies only to the Safari browser itself. If you have embedded browsers inside applications, these blockers don't apply there. So, for instance, if you're in Twitter and you click a link to an article, you still see all the ads because that's an embedded browser within Twitter rather than going off to Safari. Because that's how Twitter has decided to do it. Now, within then, almost all these apps have a button that you can hit to pop out to Safari, but by then you've already gone through the page. And so you lose the benefit. So in order for this to really have the disruptive impact that people are worried about,
it would have to be the browsing.
It has to hit the embedded browser as well, because otherwise, because frankly, I don't know about you, but on my mobile device, when I go to websites, it's almost always via Twitter or Twitter or Facebook or some other app intermediating it. I'm not just going to Safari and going to a website.
Right. Well, okay. So, all right. So I'll chime in a little bit on the subject of the 6S. So my wife got one. I will say one thing about it. I like the phone and stuff, but there is one thing that is just a little bit, and I actually talked to a couple of people that commented on the same thing. You can't use these phones with one hand anymore.
Are you doing the 6 or the 6S?
The 6S.
Okay. Plus.
I'm not talking the Plus.
So
I mean, you can't reach the whole screen with one hand.
Well, I mean, I
found it already a couple of times.
I guess that depends on the size of your hands, Yvonne. I will tell you, I got the Plus, and it is absolutely 100% true of the Plus. I love my Plus. I like the big screen. I would not give up the big screen, but I am having to change my habits in a variety of ways.
To how you use it.
How I use it, because I'm realizing there are many situations where I was using it completely one-handed. And those situations are much more limited. Like, if I'm just scrolling up or down on a web page, I can do that. But if I'm trying to do anything more substantial than that, I need two hands.
You got to use both hands.
And so...
And I get that it's a trade-off, okay? I understand, I still find that a little bit I get what the positives are, but I just want to point that out. It's not all, that's not all a win, and which I realized.
Well, and there are a number of people still and I guess you're one of them, who are wanting the smaller form factor still and wanting, I keep calling it the 6- or the 6S-, but that wants Apple to come out with a smaller device again. And I've heard people on the Android side saying the same thing. I want a top of the line Android with a small
Smaller screen.
Whereas right now, for the most part, the market has been moving towards these bigger screens, and it's harder to find the smaller screens. And when you do go for the smaller screens, they're generally less powerful.
Yes, it's devices. A less powerful phone, right?
So me again. I did watch another movie. I finished off the original Star Wars trilogy with my son, and we watched Return of the Jedi. I don't know that there's that much more to say about it. I like Return of the Jedi. I like the whole original trilogy. It's a lot of fun. A lot of people get really turned off by the Ewoks. I never minded them so much.
I never minded the damn Ewoks. I don't know why people are so freaking give me a break.
And I like the whole Darth Vader, Luke, Emperor section of the movie. I really like that part of it. There's a lot of emotional impact there. It's a nice lightsaber battle, etc. I like Return of the Jedi. And at this point there's a bunch more Star Wars that came out, both television specials and television series, and of course the prequel series.
Course, you never forget the Christmas special.
I already did that, but there's a whole bunch of stuff between Return of the Jedi and now, and I'm not worried too much about it. I wanted to get the original trilogy done before this December, because of course the new Star Wars movie is coming out, and I want to take my son and I want to do the whole thing with that and see it. I will probably try to get a few of the other things that were in between. But I'm not worried about it. I'm not like, if I don't watch all these things, I can't watch the new movie in December. It's like, we watched the original trilogy. That was the important part. The new movies will pick up after this original trilogy. So we're not missing anything by not watching the episodes 1, 2, and 3 right away. So, you know, it's fun. And by the way, my son does like them. He's been singing the Star Wars theme all over the place. He at first was like, I don't want to watch Star Wars. I don't want to watch Star Wars. And then like, by the time we got to the end of Return of the, cause we couldn't watch, we didn't end up watching a movie in a single session. Cause it took, you know, we would do like a half hour to 45 minutes at a shot. But by the time we got to the end of Return of the Jedi, he was like, Daddy, let's watch Star Wars.
Yeah. So there you go.
So there you go.
All right.
Okay. Do you want to do one or two more, or you want to be done?
No, we got to be done. I got an early call tomorrow.
Okay. I still got tons on my list, but it'll wait till later. We'll pick up some of them next week. Okay. Thanks everybody for, man, I did want to mention one. There's one thing.
All right.
I have to find the tweet where I mentioned it real quick. It was from, here we go. This, I don't know if you all have seen this, but I just had to mention it. This is a police report from September 26th from Camp Pendleton in San Diego, California. Have you seen this, Yvonne?
No idea.
Okay. The subject of the police report is actually earlier, from September 15th, I guess. Abuse of public animal, drunken or reckless driving is the subject line of this report. Here is the report. September 15th. Male Navy enlisted first class petty officer exited a bar intoxicated in an attempt to drive a POV equipped with a breathalyzer interlock system. Suspect was too intoxicated to successfully start the vehicle. So he went into the park where he captured a raccoon rummaging in a trash receptacle.
Uh-huh.
Individual utilized the raccoon to blow into the interlock system successfully. Okay. But the raccoon became unconscious from being squeezed and was discarded on the floorboard of the vehicle.
Oh, God.
Until a short time later, when the raccoon regained consciousness and began to attack the suspect while driving.
Well, that's great.
causing the vehicle to crash into a residential fence. The vehicle
That's very nice.
The vehicle came to a complete stop in an in-ground swimming pool.
Nice.
The suspect sustained numerous scratches and bite marks to the hands, face, stomach, and arms.
Oh, there you go.
So
that's,
you know, okay.
Okay.
So here's the thing.
The moral of the story is?
The moral of the, well, first of all, don't drink and drive.
Okay.
But
that's the first part.
And don't try to manage your way around a breathalyzer built into your vehicle to keep you from drinking and driving. And if you do that.
Do not use a raccoon.
Do not get around the breathalyzer by capturing and squeezing a raccoon so it breathes into the breathalyzer.
And if you're going to discard him, then don't discard him in the vehicle. So he can come back and attack you later.
Yes.
I got scared by, I mean, you know, after a hurricane somehow, I've never seen raccoons in South Florida. I was coming back up, like, it was like about 9-10 years ago, back to my rental apartment that I had at the time. And there was a freaked out raccoon right at the entrance. I don't know. I ran one way. It ran the other way. All I know is, I don't know. I was freaked. It was freaked. Anyway, those things are scary, man.
So you weren't thinking, hey, raccoon, maybe I'll pick it up and squeeze it.
No. No, did not cross my mind. I ran like hell, basically. All right.
Okay.
On that note.
On that, and we haven't even talked about the Prime Minister and the pig.
Right. We haven't. I thought maybe you took care of that last week.
No, we didn't. Oh, well. Prime Minister and the pig, if you don't know this story, go Google it.
Yes.
Okay, we are done. Thank you for joining us on yet another Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, go to Facebook and like us, share us, comment on the show. Let us know your thoughts about raccoons, pigs, politics, or is there any difference between those things? I don't know. And that's it. Hey, have a great week, everybody. Tune in next time to us. In the meantime, you know, go have fun. Do stuff. And we'll see you later. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.